You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. Guys, as I record this, the Orioles are coming off a four-game sweep at the hands of the Boston Red Sox. This is the fourth time this year the Orioles have been swept in a four-game series. And yes, that's every bit as bad as it sounds. The 2018 Orioles are, of course, a dreadful baseball team that's painful to watch on a day-in, day-out basis. That hasn't always been the case with the Orioles, though. Believe it or not, there were eras in the past when the Orioles were among baseball's best teams every year. One era in particular we're going to talk about today. Author Charles Kupfer is here to talk about a new book he just wrote. It's called Something Magic, The Baltimore Orioles 1979 to 1983. Kupfer is an associate professor of American Studies and History at Penn State Harrisburg. And guys, if you're interested in this book, I did a more extended interview with Kupfer about it at my other podcast, Baseball by the Book. You can check that out today wherever podcasts are available. We'll get to our interview with Charles Kupfer in just a second. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Charles Kupfer. He is the author of a new book about the Orioles. It's called Something Magic, The Baltimore Orioles 1979 through 1983. And if you're an Orioles fan, I definitely recommend you pick it up. It's a lot of good stuff about a really great era of Orioles baseball, a really fun era of Orioles baseball. And I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, but that's kind of my era. That's when I was growing up. I was like 10 to 15 years old during the era that he's writing about. And I remember all those teams very well. But Charles, the reason I wanted to have you on this podcast today was to talk about the 2018 and beyond Orioles in relation to these old Orioles. In other words, we know now the Orioles are facing a massive rebuild, right? We know they've made that commitment now by trading Manny Machado, by trading Jonathan Scope, Jack Britton, all these other guys. They're going into rebuild mode. What do you think the Orioles can learn as they go into this rebuild mode from a much more successful iteration of the Orioles? And that's the one you write about, this late 70s, early 80s club, which was known for being maybe the best run club in baseball at the time. What can we learn from that team? What are some of the lessons that we can apply to the 21st century?
Well, yeah, I think the biggest of all gets to this kind of mythos that we all remember and talk about, the Oriole way. And, you know, there's a lot to say about what that was and what that wasn't. But what it was not was some collection of secrets that, you know, only people in possession of the playbook understood. What all it really was a commitment to organizational consistency. And so if the Orioles, and we all hope this is true, and you know, I'm a fan as much as anybody else, are going to make this rebuild, and they're going to make it work, and they're going to make it better than, say, the Sid Thrift attempted rebuild, which we all remember with sour expressions, they're going to have to make a commitment to a plan. And then they're going to have to see the plan through, and it's going to have to be a good and smart plan. The Orioles used to be a very, very smart club. That was how they were thought of, and it was correct. So they want to get back to that. They're going to have to make smart decisions, and they're going to have to stick with them, and they're going to have to be decisions sometimes that aren't very sexy. You know, this is a club that for some time seems to have lost sight of the fact that, you know, things like international bonus signings or scouting or, you know, farm club management, not stuff that gets into the front pages or necessarily leads off the talk shows, is extremely important if you want to be a pennant contender. So, you know, the Orioles are going to have to stick to a plan and commit to it and see it through without changing every year or two or three. And what's weird, of course, is that we don't know who's going to be in charge in the front office yet. Anyway, maybe they've decided and haven't told us, but they're going to have to come up with a good plan and then they're going to have to stick to it. And the results, the great thing about baseball is the results will be very clear. We'll know whether it works or not, because guess what? They keep score.
Right. Absolutely. And unfortunately for the Orioles, they're keeping score this year because the scores have not been very good. Now, one of the things that we know about the team that you wrote about, the 79-83 team, was a team that was built largely around the farm system, right? And we talk about the key players there, whether it be Cal Ripken Jr. or Eddie Murray or Rich Dower, Mike Boddicker, Mike Flanagan, Jim Palmer. So many of these guys came up through the system, and they also had some, you know, they had some good trades in there as well. But that's the one thing the Orioles haven't done much recently. There, I think it's been a little bit better maybe the last few years, but the farm system hasn't produced very well over the years. And we know they're attempting to rebuild that through the trades that they've made. But what do the Orioles have to do to get back to where they have a productive farm system that's giving them, both everyday kind of players like a Rich Dower and the star players like the Ripkins and Murrays? What do they have to do? Besides, you mentioned international signings, but what other things did that team do in that era that the Orioles are not doing now?
Well, first of all, it is a different time, and we have unfettered free agency, and the budgetary situation is massively different than it was. But I think some of the basics haven't changed, and I think probably first in the list, answering your question, would be a commitment to really good scouting. And if you want to have really good scouting, you have to have superb judges of talent, and you have to have plenty of them so they can get out there and beat the bushes, so to speak, and find guys who are going to pay off. And when you sign players who then don't make the major leagues or who make the major leagues and aren't any good, you have to recognize that you have a problem. And money spent on scouting and money spent on an efficient, consistent, instructionally oriented minor league system is money well spent and money cut from those areas in what I think is a short-sighted parsimony is going to be money that you'd wish you'd spent if you had any interest in winning at the big league level. So you can't short shrift the talent acquisition process, and it obviously doesn't begin with major leaguers. It begins with 16 and 17 year olds.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned here that's kind of interesting to me is one of the disadvantages the Orioles have is they're in a division with, they're in a division with Red Sox and Yankees, the big spending team. And they can't afford the free agents that the Yankees and Red Sox can. They can't afford the payroll necessarily that those teams can. So it seems like it would make sense for them to be putting tons of resources into scouting and development, because that's where they can compete, right? That it doesn't cost as much money. It's a more efficient way of developing young talent. I'm just baffled at the fact that they haven't really done much with that in recent years. It really doesn't make any sense, does it?
Well, I agree with you. Now, I have a lot of suspicions about why that may be. One, I think, is, to what degree did ownership really marinate in baseball knowledge before Angelos bought the team? And, I'm not sure that there is any degree to which that was the case. And scouting becomes one of those things that, to someone who's not really versed in the intricacies of baseball, might seem superfluous. It's certainly not as sexy as signing free agents. And, interestingly, even during the era that the book covers, the Orioles Magic era, you began to see some signs of the old system cracking up a little bit. There was a report in the Sporting News in the early 80s that said, it was not sourced to a player by name, but it was a player. And he was saying, guys used to come up from Charlotte and, they had been trained at Charlotte to do exactly what Earl would want them to do when they came up to the big club. Now they're coming up from Charlotte and all they were trained to do was win games at Charlotte, which nobody cares about. So, it requires a kind of massive organizational commitment right down the line to a guiding philosophy. What's been the guiding baseball philosophy of the Orioles for the last, 20 years? I'm not sure we could really answer the question, and that may be part of the problem.
Yeah, the guiding philosophy seems to be making it up as they go along. I mean, there doesn't ever seem to be
exactly
a plan. One year, it's, well, we're going to invest heavily in free agents. The next year, we're going to cut payroll. This year, we're going to, there's never any abiding philosophy of well, we're gonna rebuild, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And I think that's why I think one of the reasons that maybe fans are a little bit optimistic right now is that they seem to be at least committed to a full rebuild for really the first time in a long, long time. I mean, under Angelos, they have rarely gone the route of being completely in rebuild mode and just, you know, accepting the fact that their major league team isn't going to be good for a while. Even though they've had a lot of teams that weren't good, a lot of those teams had veterans on them, you know, overpriced veterans, rather than youngsters who we think we're going to see for the next few years. And I think, you know, you follow this team. There seems to be some feeling, I think, that Peter Angelos has kind of removed himself from the decision-making and that maybe the Suns are doing a lot more now. Does that seem to be the case to you? And if so, are you optimistic that that's going to make things a little bit better?
It does, and I am optimistic, mostly because it doesn't cost any more to be optimistic and it makes you feel better. But yeah, I think that's right. I mean, look, Peter Angelos is a very prominent and successful and important Baltimore citizen with a large portfolio of accomplishments. But the thing that we care about the most is the baseball team because we're baseball fans. And you can't out-argue the standings. And when Peter Angelos first bought the club, he said that some people believe that you know, winning the World Series is the only measure of success. But in his opinion, you know, putting a team out there every season that fans think will contend is another measure of success. Well, if that was a measure of success, it was a measure that was, you know, hard to accomplish. And I think fans are forgiving of bad baseball if they think it's bad baseball in service to a sensible and larger plan. If you tell me the Orioles are going to be adrift for 14 years without a theme, and every year I'm going to sort of say, oh, here we go again, that's depressing. But if you say to me, okay, they've committed to a rebuild, they recognize the path, they can look at other squads like the Astros who've done it, and they can take a page from that book, I can swallow a few hundred lost seasons, absolutely, with the premise that maybe at the end of those, the team gets good again. It's the drifting and the aimlessness and then the kind of antagonism between ownership and fan base, that's what's demoralizing. It's not the losing as such. You need to be able to win at some point, but you can find fans who will be awfully forgiving if they think they know, that you know what you're doing and you're committed to winning eventually.
I was talking to Ben Reiter, who wrote about the Astros, who wrote a book about the 2017 Astros, and, of course, about the whole process.
It's a great book.
Great book, yeah, and Ben, of course, is a great guy to write it because he's the one who wrote the famous cover story from 2014 predicting they'd win the World Series in 2017. But in any case,
yeah, that's right.
That I mean, and that exact model may not work. I mean, it may be that there, you know, it's you don't necessarily have to go exactly the way the Astros did it. But again, there's a team that was ownership, management, everybody was committed to not caring about the standings in the 3 or 4 years they were rebuilding. They simply didn't care how many wins or losses they had. It was not relevant at all because the whole idea was we're building towards 2015 or 16 or 17 or whatever they were saying at the time. And of course, it has worked out extremely well for them. And not every team is going to work out exactly that way. But at least they knew what they were doing. And they didn't worry about like there's a quote in the book. It's something like who cares whether we win 94 games or whether we lose 94 games or lose 104? Who's going to care in 4 years? You know, if we're winning, it doesn't matter. And I think that's kind of how I feel about it. Right. It's like the Orioles during that whole stretch of losing seasons from 1998 to 2011, they never lost 100 games. They were never as bad as the Astros were in those few years in the middle of this decade, but they also never got good. You know, so it's like, again, if I'm willing to have a team that's just terrible as long as there's a plan in place like you. I think that's the way to go for this team.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, looking at those years that we were just mentioning when you know, they were sort of bad but not apocalyptically bad, what really depressed me was watching other teams rebuild past the Orioles in the standings, like Tampa Bay, for example, and then deconstruct, sink back down, and then often rebuild again. Meanwhile, the Orioles were sort of, you know, tootling along saying, guess what, we're not going to lose 100. How does that feel? So I'm with you. Now, what must not happen is a 3 or 4 year rebuild process followed by some radical overhaul of the front office in which, you know, the rebuild is determined to be a failure and new people are brought in. That's the sort of thing that will cause fans to tune out and not to believe. But I think fans will give this club, you know, 3-4 years of leeway. But of course, you know, we wonder who's going to be pulling the levers and pressing the buttons and hitting the toggle switches, and making the moves. And, you know, one of the things that has hurt this club prior to 2012 was, and you would see this in the national baseball coverage, they would say, well, you know, most clubs do it this way. And then there's the Orioles. You know, a silly example maybe, but I think a telling one was that for a number of years while they were trying to get the Ed Smith situation resolved in Sarasota, they had their minor league spring training and their major league spring training in two different venues. And that was just crazy. And there was a reason they were the only team in baseball who did it that way, because no other club would have allowed that to happen. So what fans, I think, don't want to see is, you know, kind of Oriole weirdness. You know, they want to see Oriole magic. They can put up with Oriole rebuilding, but they don't want to see any more strange exhibition games with Cuba in the middle of the season. They just want to see a club that has people in charge that seem to A, be committed to winning, B, have a clue to how to get there, and then C, you know, you ride the rebuilding wave and see how it goes. There's even some attractiveness to the notion of sticking with a club in the tough times with the sense that a rebuild is going to pay off with contention. I think fans could look forward to that process. And now maybe we're on the cusp of that. It could be an exciting time.
Yeah, and like you said, and this is a topic that I cover seemingly every podcast here, is we don't know who's going to be in charge. We don't know whether it's going to be Dan Duquette or somebody else. And that's one of the things that does give me some cause for concern about this whole thing, is the upper, you know, the ownership has not committed to who's going to be in charge for this rebuild. And until we know that, it's going to be hard to really know what to make of it. Well, switching gears real quick.
Well, I think that's right. And yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, just switching gears real quick, but staying on the same topic, is the cover of your book is a picture of Eddie Murray. And recently, the Orioles just brought Eddie Murray back into the fold, so to speak. I don't know what his exact role is, but kind of like as an ambassador, as somebody who's going to work with younger players, that sort of thing. Well, what do you think about that decision?
Well, that's one of the things that gives me real hope. And it starts me along the line of reasoning that maybe the sons, John and Lou, understand and have a good and positive perspective on the team's past, and they understand figures like Eddie and Brooks, who are important to fans who've cared about this team. And, you know, I don't just mean old fans like me. You know, when I was a boy, a little kid, I had reverence for players whose careers were finished long before I was born, and that's a part of being a baseball fan. So when I feel hopeful, it's when I look at the team doing something like bringing Eddie back, and I look at that and I think, yeah, maybe they are embracing the best of what being an Oriole fan can mean, and maybe they really get it now, and I hope that's the case. And then on the other hand, when I say to myself, you know, do they have a lame duck making the most significant player personnel decisions that this club is going to face for a decade, I start to wonder if I'm being hopeful in error. I hope not. I hope that Eddie is a good sign and Brooks is a good sign, and I hope that John and Lou, you know, have their heads and hearts in alignment, and I think perhaps they do.
Well, Charlie, you and I remember this era, 1979 through 1983. Younger fans don't remember it. They don't remember an Orioles team that was one of the best in baseball and won a World Series and went to another World Series. Hopefully that's going to change. Hopefully this rebuild will get them to that point, because I think it would be great for the next generation. Well, actually, there's probably a few generations since we were kids, but of those younger generations to experience some of that Oriole magic. So hopefully that's something that's going to happen sometime soon.
Well, I think so. And, you know, look, let's not give short shrift to the Buck Showalter era. I mean, I have a son. I have four kids. Only one of them is a big baseball fan. and he's 22, and he never saw a good Oriole club before 2012, and he absolutely adored those playoff series, and he absolutely adored those seasons. And I look at him, and I see a kid who's been kind of rejuvenated with Oriole enthusiasm, and, you know, like I say, that could certainly carry him through, and using him as a stand-in for other young fans through a rebuild. I think he probably wouldn't look enthusiastically at you know, a decade or two of drift. So I hope that's the case. I think maybe it is, and I got my fingers and toes crossed.
All right, well, the book that you wrote is called Something Magic, The Baltimore Orioles 1979 to 1983, and people who are interested in it should definitely check it out. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us on Locked On Orioles today.
Justin, you're the best. I love it. I'll be listening down the road, and go Orioles.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.